Shannon, and welcome to GT Radio. And today we had a little bit of a thing going on with John James. His flight got delayed. So we have a special guest host who filled in right away for us. His name is Rogelio Rubio, and he is the marketing director at Cliff Castle Casino. And Cliff Castle is voted number one casino strain for 18 years in Arizona. And he's also a tribal member of the Yavapai Apache tribe. And, Rogelio, it's great to have you on the show. Are you there?
Yeah, yes, Tino. Thank you. Thank you for having me come in.
Well, thank you for sitting in on a drop of a dime.
But,
you know, you and I are friends. We met for a short period of time at Chickasaw at a conference, and we spent two or three days on and off kind of talking about some very interesting things, especially as it pertains to tribal heritage and you know, where everything's going, you know, in Native Nations. And you had some really interesting things to say. That's why today when John's flight got delayed, you were the first person I thought about. I wanted to ask you, you know, you grew up, you know, in a tribal environment, and what are your recollections growing up as a kid?
You broke up a little bit. You wanted me to describe, see that
your recollections, you know, growing up as a kid.
Sure. Well, I moved around quite a bit between the lower part of Arizona and the upper part of Arizona. If you're recognized or familiar with the state, I was born in Sierra Vista, lived in Tucson, Phoenix, and then the upper northern part of Arizona, which is the Rideau Valley, Sedona area. And at the time I was growing up, we still didn't have casinos, obviously, and our tribe in particular was a pauper nation, as many were across the nation. But it was, you know, dirt roads. The tribe was living on a thread, and I remember all the buildings and shacks and whatnot that was around that were made out of, you know, either mud or small little trailers. And I remember it being rough but fun. Growing up as a kid, you know, you're going down to the river, you know, just being spontaneous and adventurous at the same time. But I know for my parents, it was hard for them. So it was constantly moving, where jobs were or where opportunity lie. And we seemed to always come back here. So when we finally built our casino in 92, I think a lot of people were happy at the time and saw a bright future ahead of them to be able to see an economic path for growth in our tribe. And I think I didn't really grasp that until I became a young adult and really understood, because my mom was in tribal leadership her whole life, practically, and I think I really never thought about it until I really, you know, started to mature in my life and understand what the casino brought to us and how important it was for the people of the tribe to move forward. So it was now that I think about it now, I see how fortunate we are to have this casino and have an opportunity to make our people and our tribe grow where we literally came from nothing.
Right, and when you say nothing, you're talking, you know, explain it to some of our listeners, because some people might not know, you know, no running water, you know, no job. Can you explain a little bit how it was? I mean, give us idea of how bad it was.
So it's funny that you asked that, because I was sitting down at a dinner with one of my executive hosts and a few VIPs, and afterwards we went to the office, and she's a tribal member, and she was talking about how she grew up in her area. There's two different tribal lands out here that are under the nations. They're under our tribal nation. And she was telling me how she, you know, how she grew up. There was no roads, no water. And she kind of looked at me. She's like, "Do you remember that?" And I was like, and I thought back and I was like, "Yeah, you know, I do remember no paved roads, right? There was, it was absolutely no roads out here. No street lights, you know, no, some places you didn't have running water. Most of the houses out here were built out of, you know, basically mud. most of the administrative buildings were built that way. You chopped your own wood, you know, some didn't have heat during the winter. I know most people think, well, it can't get that cold in Arizona, but in northern Arizona it certainly can. But it was tough. It was really tough living out here, and you don't, I guess I appreciate it now more than ever, because at the moment when I was growing up, you didn't realize how tough it was. But now when you see it, you're, and especially when you see the growth, those of you that are tribal and you see that on your own land, you see what's growing and building, and it's exciting, and it's you're happy for it. But it was tough. There's no doubt about it. There was no way to get vehicles in. There was, I mean, you're talking about rough terrain and a rough way of living, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of like being isolated, right?
Correct, yeah. And there was, I mean, it was tough to get in the job. I know my mom talked about schooling. They sent her away for schooling. Because there was nowhere, they wouldn't allow Native Indians, you know, Native Americans to go to the same high school as others. So she had to travel all the way up to Carson City just to get some schooling in her. So it was
a
different.
No infrastructure, isolated. You know, and then in 92, you had the opportunity to build the casino. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, how that all happened and how things started looking up after that, and, you know, where how you got your break in the gaming business.
Sure. Well, we once everything, the negotiations were going through and we got approved to build, I know we had the opportunity to partner up with what those of you remember, it's the old Fitzgerald out of Las Vegas, backed us up, helped us build our first casino, again, in the middle of nowhere, right? I mean, even we share a borderline with the town of Camp Verde, and we built it right on that borderline. The street there was even bad. And if you remember, or if you've been to Arizona, the I-17 interstate goes up from Phoenix and through Flagstaff and through Sedona. And at that time, that road wasn't, you know, a major interstate at that time. That was all dirt road. So we didn't see the opportunity that we had ahead of us when they built it. But anyways, we built a small, what then I believed was somewhere around 400 or 500 slot machines, maybe less, one restaurant. And if you remember the old school style Las Vegas casinos with the gold ceiling, real flat, that was our casino. It was built on flat land, so when it rained, it got flooded, which was a challenge to the slot machines and everyone else in the building. Yeah, I remember a couple times when it rained pretty bad, it that casino floor would get flooded. So it was, even with the casino, it was a tough time, you know. But we stuck with it, had a good group at the time. Fitzgerald Management Group helped us through that process. And then, you know, we trucked along for eight years in that casino until we got our feet under us. And then we you know, started building from there. Built our new casino on top of this beautiful hilltop in 2000. Was able to buy out Fitzgerald, so we were able to branch out on our own, and really started to see the casino produce revenue, really started bringing home money for, you know, daycare efforts, senior efforts, medical assistant for the tribes, education fund. So that's when the tide turned, I think, for us. When we really started to see, okay, here comes the good out of what we did. And
that was around 2000?
That was around 2000, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
how old were you then?
Oh, God. Let's see. That's a good question. Are you putting me on the spot? I don't remember. Young. I was in my teens. I started...
Yeah. But you remember, yeah. You remember all this happening, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we...
What changed
my mom at...
Because of that?
I think what really changed with that is, my mother at the time was part of the gaming board and tribal leadership. So I really saw her take a strong leadership role within our tribe. And she's been in and around gaming as a tribal council member, as a gaming board person, or as an employee for the past, you know, 20, 22 years. So I think what changed for me is that sense of leadership of tackling issues head on, you know, looking at issues, trying to develop them, trying to, you know, really, I saw the care for the tribe come out.
Right. People working as
a
team with resources.
And people, correct. Yeah. Unity, a sense of unity for a goal. And no matter how much there was bickering within each tribe, and we all know how that goes, but there was an ultimate goal, right? And it was to get out of the ditch. And you got that sense of unity when the casino really started to do good and started helping out tribal members. So to answer your question, that would be it. That's really what changed me to follow in gaming and follow, in particular, our casino.
Tell me a little bit about how you started and how you worked your way up.
I started when gambling was still 18 here in Arizona, as most places. So I started on the slot floor as a change rep when I was 17 and 18 years old, somewhere around there. And then about a year or two later, as most tribes do and most casinos know, there's some sort of leadership program, mentoring program, management program for tribal members to kind of learn their way of the casino business and kind of develop themselves. So I had the opportunity to jump in that sort of a role for 2 years until I found – I'm sorry, a year, year and a half – until I found – my home, which is in the marketing department. I jumped around from slots, blackjack, public safety, HR, food and beverage, front of the house, back of the house. I worked with some great chefs. And then I jumped into special events, concerts, and promotions. And I think that's where I found my love in marketing, as far as producing events, working hard, and then having that great satisfaction at the end. Promotions, being creative, you know, creating excitement. So I did that total for 5 years. And then I decided it was time for – I was young, 21 years old, something like that, for my first run. And then I decided, you know, I have this great opportunity to stay here at the casino with my tribe and learn or get my education. And the tribe offers a great opportunity for all of our tribal members to go get their education. They pay most of the tuition out there of where they wanted to go. So I jumped at that opportunity and decided to head down to Tucson, go to school, start my education path. And I knew I can always come home and help my tribe once I got my education. So pursued that. Once I completed that, I was still didn't feel ready to come home yet. I really started getting the hunger for learning, getting new skills. So I took a few sales jobs in Phoenix, you know, starting to learn. I have never really jumped into sales until I talk about telemarketing, right? Took a few jobs, hard selling jobs in Phoenix. Worked my way up over there for about 3 years. And then it wasn't until about 5 years ago I decided, you know, I think it's time to come home and kind of see what I can do to repay the nation for my education and my efforts earlier and my experience to see what I can do here at home. So,
yeah, and we were talking, it's interesting that you bring this up because we were talking a little bit about your feelings when you actually went out into the real world and went to Tucson and started going to school for the first time. I thought that was really interesting. Describe that feeling a little bit.
Well, you know, and I think we talked, you did, you're right. We did talk about it that much. And for those of you out there that are tribal members and are working, you know, in your tribal casinos or around your tribal nation, I think this is the biggest unseen opportunity out there is the opportunity to use your education funds, right? Our tribe, like I said before, our tribe gives you the opportunity to go to any university, and they completely back you up as much as they can to pay for your tuition. And it's, I don't think as a nation or as a tribe, and I know there's a few tribes out there that are dealing with the same issue, tribal members don't take that opportunity or don't take advantage of it, which is sad. But when I did, I saw the difference, right? I grew up in a small little community. We probably have, you know, 14,000 in population here in this small town, but we're surrounded by major cities. So going to college and jumping into a big city, you're no longer in this box, right? You got to see different ideas. You get to meet different people. You saw, you know, the world as wow, you know, I'm not in that little valley anymore, and it doesn't have to do with what's going on there right now. People can grow, you know. You seem to be in a tunnel vision when you stay in a small little community such as this one, and seem like, okay, this is my one path and that's it. So when I went down there, I worked for a talent agency, and I got to fly around to different cities. We bought, you know, lots of talent for major companies. We did some for the NFL, the NBA. So I went to fly around to different cities while in school, and just got this whole outlook of life, really, which was great. And I wish more people can see that, because I think that turns on a light for most people of, wow, you know, it's really unlimited out there what your life could be.
So it's kind of like get out of your comfort zone is what you're saying.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Or uncomfortable,
yeah,
zone,
absolutely.
Whatever it may be. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Yeah. If you can, right? But most cases now, because of the gaming, people have these opportunities, and what you're saying, they should, you know, not be so comfortable and stay. They should go out and see the world while they can, and meet and hear new ideas and see different things. But some people might be afraid that they'll be discriminated against or they won't fit in. Or what was your experience about that?
You know, I was scared at first. I'm always a little on the adventurous side, so I like to, you know, I kind of, maybe too adventurous. Sometimes I may have gotten in trouble back in college, but it was certainly fun. But you know, I was always in high school here in a small town. You had your groups, right? Especially in a small town, the native kids hung out with the native kids, cowboys hung out with the cowboys.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was like that for most people in high school, in a small town. So moving from, you know, a small high school town of maybe there's, you know, 20 kids in a graduating class to a major university as the U of A, it was a shock. You know, you seemed kind of lost. You kind of seemed like, okay, I have no friends here, and I just got dropped into, you know, 300,000 student school. Who am I? What do I do? And who do I hang out with? Who do I ask for help? Who do I go to? You know, it's so it was a little bit of a shock, I would say, for the first few, you know, months, trying to socialize with others. But I think I think I fed in pretty well, and I got used to it pretty fast because I had the opportunity to work on the gaming floor first. And don't get me wrong, whether you do experience first and education second, and some people like to reverse that, get your education first and then come out here and get the experience. To me, I don't know if it matters, because I never done the other route, but since when I went to college or to university, I felt better because I had some experience in the gaming world, and especially going for school for marketing, because I worked in marketing, I felt going to university. Some of the classes,
right.
You kind of developed
your social skills a little bit, right?
Right, yeah. And some of the things they taught, you know, you take your general classes, then you take your special classes in marketing and your undergrad classes, and you were able to fit the dots. It was easier to connect the dots, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can take my major courses and think back to my experience in the gaming world and say, ah, okay, I see now. I see how this can work. I see how this works. I see how what they're teaching me in school right now is practically what I did and what my team did in the casino environment. So,
right.
It really got me intrigued, right? It was like, wow, I want more of this. You know, I want to just eat this up because it was good. Where if you do it the other way, I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure if I would be so interested in the education process, you know, because you drop someone there right after high school, and then they seem kind of, you know, oh, I just went through all this, now I'm here. So
it's too intense. It's too intense,
yeah.
Is what you're saying. You need some sort of a buffer, especially because, like you said, you're used to your environment, you're used to the same people, and you're used to then being dropped into such a big environment is kind of a shock, right?
Yeah, it was. But you did well.
I mean, you know, from talking to you when I was up at Chickasaw, I was very impressed with you know, how you were articulating your feelings, and also how you realized, you know, how fortunate you were that you made the right decisions to get your education, to learn more, and to motivate yourself.
I think it just comes naturally sometimes to me that I don't know if I should say this on air, but I get envious in my own personal way sometimes. So let me give you an example. I hate how that sounds, but if I see something that I like or I see something that I want, it only encourages me to do well so I can get there or do that.
That's called motivation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the drive in me. It's the passion in me. It's the motivation.
But
it's whatever you want to call
it. The self-motivation, right?
Yeah. So when I left the casino and I got dropped there, I mean, when I went to school, it was kind of like, okay, I'm scared, you know, I don't know what to do. And then once I saw people graduate, and when I saw my first graduation as a freshman at the university, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I can do that. I just went through my first year. I can do this. You know, I can be that person up there, and I can get there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it only drove me more. It was little things like that throughout my life that really pushed me to be where I am. And then again,
go ahead, sorry, the leadership?
No, it's all right.
Let me ask you a little bit about Cliff Castle Casino. Tell us a little bit about it. Tell us how, you know, your role and some of the good stuff and what's going on there.
Well,
and then we'll open it up to some questions.
Sure. Cliff Cass Casino is a small casino in the Verde Valley. We're about an hour north of Metro Phoenix, about 45 minutes drive south of Flagstaff, and about 20 to 50 minutes east of Sedona. We have about 666 machines, 10 blackjack tables, small poker room, 4 venues to eat at. We're a family-friendly casino. We like to use our marketing leverage that way. We like to tout that because we have a 20-lane bowling alley. We have a Kids Quest child care center that takes anywhere from, I believe, 2 months to 13 years of age. It's a huge facility, state-of-the-art video games and just, you know, the works for children to go in there. We are currently building a new luxury hotel, 122-room tower that's supposed to open this summer. We're about, maybe 100 yards off the major interstate, so prime location. If you look at the state of Arizona, we're right smack in the middle of it. And it's been growing. It's been fun. It's been fun to be a part of that team. We're a small marketing team. We do everything in-house, no agencies. Huge. I pride myself to be data-driven, so we have great partners in the industry that supply us the softwares, but I require my team and me to sit down and look at the data, follow the market segments, look at, you know, comparisons week to week, month to month, last year to this year. What did we do? We plan everything out. Great team. So we're very, I think we're very aggressive for a small team, but we have fun, you know. I think that's the most important part of it.
And you're
located
in a nice, beautiful spot on the mountain, right? You're right there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, if you've never been to Sedona, it's gorgeous. Once you come over this hill, we are right smack in this small little hill, and you see all the red rocks, the purple rocks of Sedona. You see Jerome, which is an old copper mining town sitting on the side of a hill. We have wineries. We're growing in wineries here. I know those of you that are like wine in Arizona, but it's it's pretty good, I tell you that. We are probably about, you know, 12 degrees different than Phoenix below. We may get some snow, or it may just freeze us, but it's a good spot. Really green, lots of rivers, lots of waterfalls. It's a beautiful place, and I do recommend if anyone has time to travel to Sedona, do. Because it's a gorgeous location.
And it's where you grew up.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know that land like the back of your hand.
Yeah, yeah, and it's funny, when you live here your whole life, you don't really understand the beauty around here until you grow up or until you bring, you know, friends over that are not known around the valley. We have this huge, the I-17 drops down into this nice little canyon, and when you look, you get to see the mountain range, and people get shocked about the, you know, the colors of Sedona and everything. So once you get one or two people telling you, wow, you live, you know, this is where you grew up, you kind of say, yeah, it's home. But you don't appreciate it until you hear that a few times.
Yeah, it brings a different perspective to it.
Yep.
Definitely a different perspective. Fascinating stuff. Let's, I see we've got a few call-ins here from some people who want to ask some questions, and we'll start with one person here. I can see. Let me see here. Hello, welcome to GT Radio. Who am I speaking with? Hello.
Tino, it's Arlene. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Rogelio, are you on?
Yep, sure am.
Oh, Arlene, how are you? Arlene Allman.
Yes. Hi, Rogelio.
Good to hear.
Hello, Arlene.
So I called to ask you, I know that you are new to the marketing world. What are your plans to do different things to attract Phoenix customers to come out to your casino? I know you've got a new facility and a new hotel, correct?
Correct.
So do you have big plans to do some new things? Because I know that you have to constantly innovate. Do you have some big plans to attract Phoenix customers besides getting out of the heat to come to visit your new casino?
Yes, we came up with a whole plan this year for the hotel. Our challenge was before our hotel was detached from the casino. So we had 80 rooms that wasn't attached to the casino. We're probably the only casino in the state that doesn't have their hotels attached to the casino. It wasn't even a hotel, let me put it that way. It was a motel. So we saw this opportunity to really tackle the Phoenix market now, to finally give them what they want, especially the travelers. Right now, our 80-room hotel is filled up, right, all the time. And most of them are one-time travelers that are driving up from Phoenix, going to see the Grand Canyon, seeing Sedona, going up Flagstaff, whatnot, stuff like that. So when we saw the hotel, we had the opportunity to open up this hotel. We saw a door being opened for another market. I know by looking at our database, a lot of travelers, a lot of one-timers coming up. So we want to be that destination spot. We want to show that we're giving you a new experience rather than the old hotel, that we're basically the center of it all. You can come here. We know we're a casino. We'd love for you to stay, but we have Sedona. You have pink Jeeps. You have out of Africa. You can go see wildlife. You can hike. You can canoe. You can go winery. So I think us positioning ourselves as a destination and entertainment besides the casino is really what we're going to tackle and use to our leverage to go after the Phoenix market. The experience. We also, the experience. New experience. The experience. Yeah. And we've been using that in a lot of our advertising taglines. You know, come visit the new or come experience the new Cliff Castle Casino Hotel because we are different now. You know, having the family amenities is a great add-on. Sedona shuts down practically at 8, 9 o'clock, so there's no nightlife around here. And we're happy to be the nightlife if you want to go out and travel during the day. We're working with some new packages that I can't say right now for sure, but they're going to be exciting with things with the wildlife here and the Jeep tours. And we currently have a helicopter tour to see the mountains. So we're gonna position ourselves as a destination and really come out and relax and come see the beauty of the Verde Valley.
I've been there when it was the original facility, and I haven't been since you have remodeled. So I need to get up there.
Come on up. Contact me.
I'll give you Rogelio's info, and you can go up and visit. Arlene, let me take another question here, but stay on. We may come back to you. Okay.
Okay.
Thank
you. Stay on, Rogelio.
Yep.
Hello, this is GT Radio. Who am I speaking with? Hello, GT Radio. Who am I speaking with? Rogelio, are you there?
Yep, still here.
Mm-hmm. Hello, GT Radio. I guess they can't hear us. Okay, we'll go to the next person. Hang on one sec. Hello, this is GT Radio. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Kane Meyer from Carnival. Can you hear me?
Oh, Dean, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Dean Myers from Carnival Cruise Lines.
Yes. Really appreciate the letting me call in. Great story, and congrats on your success, Rogelio.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The question I had was related to being family focused with the bowling alley and the arcade. Carnival's similar in that way that we kind of cater to families. How do you walk that line to market to the family with gaming kind of being the central focus and reserved for adults?
I don't think we shy away from it at all. I guess it depends on the venue and the market. Let me give you an example. We partner up a lot with the local high schools, clubs and stuff like that. And when we do we sponsor them as the non-gaming venues. We try to push our efforts in that as far as our bowling alley or our kids' venue or other venues like that to kind of really focus on giving back to the community. We do a great 4th of July picnic for the family where we have it out on our pavilion. And we really don't cram the gaming aspect down their throat, right? We give them chips, we give them soda, we do inflatables, we do, you know, wet stuff out there and then have a nice fireworks show. And again, it's not like we're handing out any kind of free play out there or anything. We just let the families enjoy themselves. In the Phoenix market, of course, yeah, we'll in some of our commercials, we'll throw, you know, little hints and teasers there that we do have family stuff as well with gaming. For us, again, it's sticking with that destination. Our tagline is the perfect place to play, and we like to kind of use that in a bold way and say it's perfect place to play for everyone, right, even your two-year-old. So it is a thin line, though. Don't get me wrong. There is times where, you know, you're kind of like, ugh, we shouldn't touch that or we can't touch that. So it's really sitting down with your team. I got a great PR guy, and me and him sit down and we kind of discuss these items and topics and events. So I guess it's just really identifying where you want to go, who do you want to be, and sticking to it, right? I don't know if that answered your question, but I think for us, I don't like to kind of shy away from that because it's our leverage. I think any marketing department, whether you're gaming, whether you're Apple, whether you're, you know, a Fortune 500 company, most of them are going to tell you what's your leverage and use it against your competitors. And I think we do that very well with the family aspect. So we're going to use it.
Well, just having Kids Quest is a major thing because I know that Marcy and I use it in Vegas quite a bit at the casinos at Red Rock and Green Valley Ranch. If we want to go out and have a good time, Mattia's excited about going to Kids Quest because it's so awesome. So you can have you can have the kid having a great experience, and Marcy and I can have a date and not worry that, you know, that we're on site and our kid's just having a great time.
Yep, absolutely. And it's if you do have the opportunity now to partner up with a team just as Kids Quest, or I think they have Cyber Quest now or something of that fact, meet with them. I encourage your marketing department to meet with them weekly, monthly, quarterly, whatever you can. Tap into their database, exchange data, talk about those customers. That's what we do. We look at all our VIPs that come through, regular guests. We compare data, gaming data compared to, you know, time on machine compared to Kids Hours and Kids Quest. And we
and
offer
also
right
money,
now
money spent
right?
That's not related to gaming, right?
Right. Absolutely. So we do that with our you know, our non-gaming venues. I think that's the most important thing. Absolutely.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Gene, let me take another question. Hank, stay on, please. If we have time, we'll come back and ask you something else. Thanks for calling in and hang on. Thanks. Hello, this is GT Radio. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, Tino, it's Wayne over at Experiture. How you doing?
Wayne, how are you? Good. How's it
good.
Going?
Good,
you
good.
Did you have a question for Rogelio?
I do. I mean, first of all, you know, listening to the great location that he's at, I wish I was there rather than in New York right now. But, Rogelio, you know, one of the things that I think of is, you know, you get the player on property and you've got all of these great things up there and, you know, you market the experience. You know, after they've experienced coming up to your area and enjoying, you know, the property and the area, how do you market to them to make sure that they, or to encourage them to come back?
That's a great question. Again, our data is everything to us. I love using, and I think this goes out to most casinos again, most direct mailers is the most, I think I want to claim it's one of the most powerful things right now, to getting people back, retention, getting them through the door, offers, and really be data driven. If you see, and then forecast, we have a big, snowbird community. Sorry to, if that offended anybody calling them snowbirds, but we do. We get a lot of snowbirds that come down to Phoenix and our area during the winter, and we will track them. We'll anticipate their visit. We'll get their addresses, and we'll have a mailer and offer them in their mailbox when they land in their summer home down here. We'll mail them in at their winter home to kind of let them know, hey, we're still here. Hope to see you again. Those from the local community, we see their average play, their average visits, and try to be aggressive in getting them back a fourth, fifth, sixth visit. Phoenix is such a large city. You know, you're talking about 6-7 million people down there. And you're always going to get new people, and you got to know you're not always going to get all of them back, but certainly be aggressive with trying to get them back. And you know, I think this past, 5 years, I've been kind of testing things, whether it's digital, traditional marketing, to see what works. And I think we found a good sweet spot, but then again, it's not always going to work. So looking at every year at your data and looking at, who can we get back, who's fallen off, how can we change things up? I think that's probably the most important. That's what we do. Last year we hit them with one offer. Do we give them four? Get my player development on the phone. You know, have them call some of these guys. So I think it's you want to use all your channels, all your marketing channels, your mix, whatnot, to just get out there and really target them and by any means you can get them and make that touch. I think that's how you got to do it, and that's how we certainly do it here at this property.
No, great. Thanks, Rogelio. So it sounds like it's all about the keeping really good data and having a 360-degree view of the player and making sure you target at the right time.
Yeah, when you are doing these offers, or you're sending out this, whatever campaign you're doing, most people like to look at it and say, hey, did I make money? If I made money, okay, good. Put that, it worked. Don't stop there. If you made money, look what made you money, I think this is also important. And what didn't bring the revenue higher than what you maybe expected or maybe what could help. So I think really focusing on each campaign and understanding, the pros and cons of each campaign can help you further, dive into that segment you're looking to. Because most people like to see whether did a campaign make me money or not. Good, let's try it again, or let's do it again. Or that didn't work, brush it off. We're never doing that one again. So really don't just do that, Look at the details. Look at every single piece of it and make a sound decision for the next time.
Right.
Great.
More analysis on every single one and more in depth, and then trying to make it better and saying, yeah, I've made money, but can we make more and optimize it?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, we know it. I was going to talk about something else, but no, yeah, that's perfect.
What were you going to talk about?
Oh, just a recent promotion we ran, but that has nothing to do with that. With getting
no,
some
go
of
ahead.
Customers back.
Tell us. Go ahead. Tell us.
Oh no, it was. We know that. You have your ups. If you look at, because we look at the hourly play on all promotions as well, right? So we jumped at the opportunity. You see this bell curve obviously going up around noon, afternoon time, and then dipping back down. So we experiment all the time on either late hours or early hours. Will that flatten out? Did it increase pulling in, or did the revenue just spread longer? So I think, you know, it's stuff like that, and really experimenting to see if it's going to work or not. And don't be scared to do it. I don't want people to be scared to say, nah, that's a little too risky. That's too much money involved. Well, how are you ever going to know, you know, if you don't try it and you don't experiment? And that same, that goes for, you know, people that are driving by, you know, if you don't know who they are until you try new things with them.
Right. Prospecting like that. Wayne, thanks a lot. I'm going to jump to the next question, but we may come by and talk to you.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah, that was great. Hang on one sec. Let's see here. Hello, this is GT Radio. Who am I speaking with?
This is Michael. How are you guys doing?
Michael, good. How are you?
Good, Michael.
Good, good. Hey, really, I got a question I want to ask is about mentoring and how, you know, what were the mentors like in your career? Who were your mentors, and how do you see your role as mentoring the next generation of marketers coming up?
I had some good mentors in my life, whether it was gaming or in life. You know, I'd have to give it to, you know, my mother, great leadership as far as tribal leadership is concerned in the gaming world. I had a few, couple general managers that really mentored me. One great marketing director that recently left a few years back. That was a great mentor. Really believed in me. And same as a recent general manager that did the same. And you know, growing up and going to school, friends, family, teachers that really got mentored. And I think they all bring a piece of you, right? You all get a little piece of the puzzle of who you are and what you need to do along the way. Whether it was, you know, my uncle back when I was a kid teaching me how to chop wood and weather the cold and, you know, kind of the sense of, you know, we're in the wilderness, man up kind of thing, stay strong to really smart marketing people. I think each one of them brought a piece of my puzzle in life and in a personal and professional way. As far as your second question is, I think we are. I mean, you're going to get a mix of mentors in your life, more that are going to stick out than others. Now you have athletes, you know, out there that are encouraging young ones, which is great. You have entrepreneurs. You have, you know, your parents, business professionals. It's a new world. It's a big world. As far as gaming is concerned, I would think that I would hope that most of us understand that gaming is a growing business. We always got to stay ahead of the eight ball or behind the eight ball, I should say, not ahead of it. And don't be afraid to teach people. I'm young, but I'm always willing to teach others. It only makes my team stronger. Okay, I'm not the type of person that keeps information in, or if I know how, I'm going to keep it in. I like to teach others, and I got to see that with some of the people I'm teaching now who may be even older than I am, that I know how it feels to mentor someone out, because when you see that brightness in their eye, or you see that light bulb turn on, or you see that, you know, that sort of shell come out, them coming out of the shell or something coming free, it's that gives me a sort of happiness that, I mean, it's indescribable, right? I had the opportunity to mentor a couple people already and really tried to get them out of their comfort zone and shell, and I'm telling you, they're gonna go places. So I think mentoring now is important, and it's us right here, right now on this conversation.
Thank you. That's a great perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really good. Mike, that was a great great question. Stay on, and I'm going to I'm going to go to the next question. Hang on one sec. Yeah, here, let's see who we got. Okay. Hello, and welcome to GT Radio. Who am I speaking with? Hello, hello. Hello. Who am I speaking with? Okay, I guess don't have anything there. Hang on, let's see what we got here. Hello, hello. Welcome to GT Radio.
Hi, it's Richard Hoffman. How are you?
With?
It's Richard Hoffman.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. Did you have a question for...
Yeah, I would say if I'm, you know, someone young, starting out, just graduated from college or university, and I, you know, I want to, you know, look at a career in the casino industry. You know, is there any, you know, departments or any facets of the casino industry that are really taking off more than others?
You know, I guess that's going to depend on the casino. For us, it's the hotel, right? That's where we just had a job fair where we need more staff, but we just hired, got, you know, 60 to 80 people, not only for the hotel, but for the whole property, but majority of that being the hotel. But if you're truly looking at getting in the gaming business, you know, going through that management mentor program, I kind of like them all. I like them all. I found it fun to deal blackjack, supervise blackjack. I was having fun working in the kitchen. The gaming world is so fast-paced and the environment so exciting. I don't think you can go wrong anywhere. Whether you're a bowling attendant or just the castle, you know, players club clerk. And I think it depends on the property of which department or what, you know, industry is growing the fastest. Gaming's always going to be there. So I think my suggestion is follow your passion. Follow what you like. Don't just jump in to get in there and just work at a casino. Find your niche. Find what you like to do and pick the right department. If you like dealing with customers, you know, and guest service, do that. If you like numbers and you like to be alone, or you like to just kind of that, you know, go to, you know, I'm not saying go to finance, not to all my CFOs over there or anything, but I'm just trying to find the right fit for you. Just, you know, if you like making cocktails, go to a beverage. Just figure out what you like to do and follow it. I'm a big believer of following your passion and following what you love to do. So that's my recommendation.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Thank you. Okay, I think we have time for one more question. And let me see here. Let's pick randomly. Hello, welcome to GT Radio. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, it's Doug. I wanted to know, just what do you think of the new generation of young Native people? You know, how the millennials of the Native nations are
sure.
Working it out?
Sure, that's a great question, and I know Tino and I spoke about this a lot out at Choctaw for the marketing conference. I'll speak to my tribe. I think that's easier, and those that can relate can relate. Here in my tribe, I think there's a passion to go out there, do something, and, you know, be someone. But we do have our struggles, you know, with drugs and alcohol. We have our problems with that. Violence, you know, just like a small tribe here would. You know, I think, and it goes back to that, the opportunities and the benefit to young ones, to millennials. Some are going to take advantage of it and go get their education. You know, you have a beautiful casino here, come work, we'll train you. I fear
and I'm sure this goes out to generations before me, that my generation, and I'm at the tip of the millennials, is that, you know, I don't know if they have that sort of commitment right now to do that. I think there's too many distractions out in the world right now for them. But I only hope that somehow they can focus and take advantage of you know, the opportunities that are out there for them. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, casino business. You know, just get your education. You know, work for the tribe. You know, do government work. Something, but get a drive in you. Use the opportunities that are open for you and take advantage of that. Because in our tribe, there's, you know, there are struggles. I see more of them going out there. And those of you that are tribal and your tribe is dealing with these kind of issues, you know, hit the streets, get out there, be present, you know, get with your tribal council, get with your legislative people and your governments and try to get creative ways of helping the young ones out for the tribe. If I can do it for a casino, I can do it for a tribe, and I think that's how we need to think about it moving forward.
Banding together and making sure that the next generation and one end to that and one end to that have good leadership, good mentors, and great experiences, because there's so much more opportunity now, right?
Absolutely. When I was young, there wasn't, and we didn't have a casino, and we were secluded on this one reservation. You know, you looked up to your parents, which is nothing. I mean, you know, you looked up to your parents, obviously, but sometimes a lot of us just grew up on the dirt road. But now that so many years has passed, there's great mentors out there that are tribal members and that can come back home and help tribes do that. Tackle that specific, you know, that problem. And I would say those of you that are in power and can do something about it, or if you're an executive, you know, and you're doing well for your casino, reach out to your tribe, your own tribe, and see how you can help them and the little ones come up and be a great mentor to them. Be a beam of light for them, that's for sure.
Great. Thank you, Doug. Great question. Well, Rogelio, it's been you know, first of all, I'd like to thank you for being on the show. And second of all, I want to thank you for making it so interesting,
absolutely.
On such a short notice. And I always love talking to you at length just because it gives us a real feel of you know, some of the struggles that are still going on in Native Nations and how people can overcome them. And you're a great leader. You're doing great things. You have a grasp of marketing. You've got your education, so, you know, you're a role model, and you're helping things change, and, you know, I really respect you for that.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Thank you for the invite. It's fun.
Thanks, buddy, and thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate
it. Yeah,
have a
I
great
appreciate
night.
It too. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's our show for tonight. In 2 weeks, I think it's June 22nd, we have the Chris Jenner, who's the director of digital marketing for Caesars Entertainment. So I hope you'll join us then. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. Talk to everybody. Get their story, because it'll enlighten your life. My name is Tina Magnano. Thanks for joining us for another great show. And we'll see you on June 22nd. Ciao for now.